Wait a minute, what am I doing? Two men in a what? Two friends from film school, one who graduated, one who did, and they decided to make a podcast. Okay, this has never been done before, right? Okay. This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.
The problem with League isn't the game, it's the people that play the game.
Correct.
Listen,
it's
I have never met a person who plays League at any high level who's happy. And I think
I'm happy.
You don't play League anymore.
Okay, but I'm still in like the top 5% of players.
You don't play anymore.
I'm still up there.
Also, they're not unhappy because they're playing League at high levels. The only person who would play League at high levels is inherently an unhappy person. If you're just playing casual, you can be a happy person.
Correct. I do believe that low ranks enjoy the game more than I do. I will say that with my full chest, that low ranks are having more fun.
Sure. I believe that 100%.
Because you can do whatever you want. It doesn't matter.
Who doesn't
want
to be Nunu? The Eddie knows the way.
Oh, I miss Nunu Bot. I know. You don't even know what that is, but I
played Nunu Bot. I played it when it came out, Neve.
I don't believe you.
I wasn't like a great player, but I played casual.
Name one phrase from the Nunu Bot skin.
The Nunu Bots? Oh, I thought you were saying Nunu Bot.
No, like Nunu Bot, like the skin that they remade and now it's terrible.
I didn't play that with that
skin.
Dude,
that old skin was so good. It was like an AI generated voice and all it did was talk shit.
Nunu Bot Lane was what I thought she said for the non-gamers in the room.
I still play Nunu Bot Lane. Every once in a while, I'll like load in. I'll be like, you know what I can do?
The Yeti knows the way. Speak softly and ride a big Yeti. I'm getting this podcast demonetized.
He doesn't even say that anymore.
I know. I reworked
our man.
I got into fucking Wild Rift. I'm like, Nunu. And I'm like, what the fuck is this shit?
Yeah, it's a Nunu and Willump. They like added
Stupid.
Willump
into it. I want to know the boys there. I'm not here for the boy.
You were always over there for the boy.
I'm not here for the boy. I'm here for the big Nunu who knows the way.
No, Nunu is the boy. The Yeti has always been Willem.
And I learned that after they made that clear. I thought the Yeti was Nunu. No. And I thought he knew the way. And they shattered my world conception. So now I have to play fucking Master Yi.
Welcome to the Two Men in a Movie podcast, where every week one man shows another man a movie he can't believe he hasn't seen. I'm your League of Legends ambivalent host, Harrison.
As always, your
League of Legends ambivalent host, Harrison Poole, joined today by my work husband, the cares too much about this children's game, Matthew Olianicek. How you doing, babe?
Children should not play League of Legends. It's not a game for children. First off, toxic. Second off, I don't think a child could play at any level. It's too complex for them.
So we're joined today by...
Fortnite is a child's game.
We're joined again. We have a guest this episode again.
The love triangle is back, folks.
Is that what we're called now? The love triangle?
I think, yeah.
It's
if we brought in that unicorn, it'd be a love square.
Oh, the Lucky Charms unicorn.
This is my partner. Hey, say hi, Geneva.
Hi.
She is on record as saying she won't dye her hair the colors of the unicorn when I suggested it. And you said you don't want to be fourth wheel to the unicorn.
I don't want to be fourth wheel to a unicorn, dude.
Yeah. Me and Harrison were getting hot and heavy over this unicorn.
I think the unicorn should dye its hair to look like me.
I could do that.
Yeah, I think that's what we should do.
Probably make Harrison more comfortable when he's fucking him. Familiarity.
So Neve brought the movie today.
Yeah.
What movie did you bring?
We have Danny DeVito's wonderful masterpiece, The War of the Roses.
It's wild that he made a movie about English Civil War, so I was not expecting it. Yeah. It's a really good history joke.
No, I got it.
It's really good.
I got
good.
It. I understood it.
I had no idea why the movie was named it until they're like, oh, okay, they're the roses. And then I was like, Danny DeVito, clever little boy.
Yeah.
Just a little dude.
Well, clever little man at that point. He
I
was
love
a grown.
Danny DeVito.
Great director. Doesn't get enough credit for it.
No. Dude, I told the movie's great. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is a handful. Like, he did Matilda. He did Hoffa. I have not seen
he Death. He did Hoffa?
Yeah, he did Hoffa. Jeez. I have not seen Death to Smoochie in like a decade, but I remember it. 17 thinking it was really fun, if I'm thinking of the correct movie. He hasn't
he's
done
thinking
one.
Of School of Rock.
I mean, I'm always thinking of School of Rock. I want to say came out the same year as Death.
Do you know he used to watch like School of Rock twice a day.
I know. He still watches it. Like, every once in a while, I'll, like, come upstairs and, like, I'll hear Jack Black and I'll go back downstairs.
It's nice. I watch it once a year on my birthday.
Like, it's not even watching School of Rock, like, 300 times. It's wild to me. It's the watching any movie twice in a day.
When I was younger, this should be no surprise to anybody that I'm autistic. When I was younger, I would watch, like, the original Lion King release so much that I melted the DVD in my like little TV.
Did you watch it multiple times a day?
I would watch it constantly.
This is nuts to me.
It was one of those TVs where it was like the VHS player and the DVD player were like in the TV itself. And I watched it so much that I melted it in there, and my mom had to get me a separate DVD player.
I didn't know DVDs could melt. Yeah. So now you could like ruin the VHSs, which we had when I was children. I was many. I became one man later. We Voltroned.
Right. Get a better reception. The War of the Roses. Yeah. It's a great movie. Every time I've ever had anybody watch this movie, like for the first like I'd say like 30 minutes, I wouldn't say it's terrible, but it's very slow. It's like
I was gonna bring it up. The first 30 like we're like a minute 25 and I'm like, a lot of setup still happening.
Yep. First half hour sucks. Oof. All the time. I'm like, I need y'all to stick with me.
It's just all built up.
Yeah, I'm like, I need y'all to stick with me. Like, I promise it gets better.
Nothing individually is bad, but you're just like, oh man, this is watching an unhappy marriage. I'm watching a dysfunctional marriage.
It's because he's setting up so much for like the peak of the movie. And then like, of course, the moment comes where like you can pinpoint like the exact moment that the movie gets good, right?
Yeah.
It's all coming up to that exact moment, and it's just wonderful. It all makes sense in that exact, and that's what makes Danny DeVito the best director ever. I'll die on this hill.
How many other Danny DeVito movies?
I don't
have
need
you
other
seen?
Danny DeVito movies.
You do.
I don't.
Did he write it?
No, I forget who wrote it. Vamp.
Because I don't think that the directors like choose. I mean, they're important for the pacing, but it's, if a man writes like 30 pages of setup, you're gonna be doing like that. You know, unless like in the script, it was just like one page where it's like we see scenes of their unhappy marriage, and Danny DeVito's like,
I'm pretty sure in the
minutes.
Script, it's like
it was written by Michael J. Leeson.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who that is.
I don't know who that is either. A lot of times on this podcast, he'll say something like, "Oh, this was done by this." I go, "Oh, wow!" But I don't know what the fuck
he was a TV
like.
Writer forever. Like,
what did he do? Taxi.
Like all Partridge Family, crazy. Odd Couple, All of the Family. Yeah, he did do Taxi. He did Taxi for 2 seasons.
That's insane.
Because Danny DeVito was in Taxi.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. So I was like,
you know, that makes sense.
Must have done Taxi. Yeah.
That's crazy that you just locked into Taxi, though.
Anyway, I'm gonna start a little prophetic cult now, I think.
You're doing a new cult 2025? Yeah, it's not a sex cult?
It's not a sex cult. Yeah. I'd explain in length.
So then what are you doing in the cult if it's not a sex cult?
See, I'd explain to someone. They're like, why don't you want to have a sex cult? I'm like, it sounds exhausting.
I have a quote in my shit, Matthew. Write that down. Write down, boy.
Yeah.
I have a quote from you saying, new cult 2023. Don't worry, it's not a sex cult.
It's not. The idea, look, I don't even want to watch a movie twice. And like one day, if I have to like fuck multiple women in the same day, that sucks. I'm gonna be so tired and sweaty.
But like, that's the point of being the cult leader. You don't have to do that. You can instruct other people to do that.
I want to tell people
you
to fuck.
You also get to pick your favorite.
Yeah, you get to pick and choose.
Yeah, I'll have like a cult wife, but it's not gonna be a sex cult. I just want
a
cult.
It doesn't even have to be like you are the one having sex with them. Like you could just be like their god.
Yeah, I don't want people having.
And then like they have to procreate to make more followers.
Oh, I don't want children.
You could be the next Catholic.
I just want people to clap for me. Go, yay.
Then you should go to open mics and like write a tight 10.
I will be stoned out. You'll drive me out like some biblical figure. Jesus wasn't driven from Jerusalem. Who am I thinking of? Who's driven out?
Miss Daisy. Okay.
I don't want to be here. I did not like that.
I sugar got a drink at the gas station.
There's beer in the fridge.
I could have had a Pepsi. No, I don't drink alcohol.
This Mountain Dew Baja Blast.
That sounds terrible.
You're a gamer girl.
That sounds terrible.
Your hair will turn the color of Baja Blast.
I don't want that. I can't explain how little I would want green hair.
Hmm?
What did you call her?
A gamer girl.
Not what I thought you
what
said.
What do you think I said?
I thought you said you're a camp girl. I'm like, no. Unless you have a double life that you've
changed?
Been hiding from me forever.
You're just staring daggers at me. I'm like, I said gamer girl.
My career change has been announced. This is so sad.
Harrison can't know I've been doing taxes for her cam girl show for years. I do it for her and Amaranth and Brandon, who's bigger than Amaranth.
Damn. Yeah. And here I could have been a spicy accountant the whole time.
I mean, you're an adult.
I can't express how little I would want to do that.
Yeah, I'll be. I
which part?
I'm trying real hard to be cool right now and like not be like toxic and controlling, but it would bother me. I'll be real with you.
Good thing it's not on my radar. It would absolutely bother me. It's not even kind of on my radar.
I once swiped on a OnlyFans person on Facebook. My mom was like, why would you want to do that? I'm like, that's a queen right there. It would feed my ego to be in like an exclusive relationship with someone that a lot of guys jack off to. Because it's like, no, not yours, mine.
I understand that thought process, and I do not even slightly agree with it.
You're on the show. Would you describe Harrison as an innocent, naive little choir boy?
No, what the fuck?
All right. He said, yeah, I think that he's a little choir boy once.
He hangs out in some of the grossest bars I've ever seen.
Yeah, because we argue about sex stuff, and I guess I do kind of view him as a naive little choir boy sometimes, little schmucks preaching the Lord. You got to point the microphone towards you, Nat. I wasn't talking. I have a microphone. I don't need yours. Unless we can do like ASMR. That'd be fun.
I might kill him. Don't rub the microphone on your face.
Okay, I'm so sorry. We're done. I'm killing the bit.
Yeah, you're the one with the headsets on. You're the only one paying for this bit. Like, we're fine. Talking about the movie.
I don't think it was that great of a house.
It wasn't about the house.
I know it's not about the house, but...
It was a decent house. For back then, that was a decent house.
It's kind of old.
Well, yeah, it was kind of old.
Mm-hmm. It was just a little too large and a little too fancy for me, but at the same time...
It was fancy in, like, an old way.
So, like, first of all, we should probably preface that the whole thing takes place, like, as a divorce in this massive fuck-off house.
And it's a story Danny DeVito is telling to a man who's seeking a divorce, and he's like...
Like, it starts out where the dude's coming to Danny DeVito, who is both the director, actor, and a divorce lawyer in this, right? And the dude's
Danny,
like,
DeVito is. He doesn't play a character.
Yeah, no, he just is. And so, like, the dude's like, I want to divorce my wife. And Danny DeVito's like,
let me look
out this window while smoking a cigarette.
In Washington, D.C.? Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, because one, it's the Capitol building, but two, the one dude is running for Senate. The one client. Yeah.
You're in for Senate anywhere you want, really, but...
I'm aware. No, I...
Senate these nuts.
Senate these nuts.
Why?
Keep that in.
Senate... I'm gonna filibuster. That'd be a fun bit.
The house
a
was okay.
A fun bedroom bit, if you just pretend you're, like, congressman the entire time. Make everything based around congressmen.
My mother occasionally listens to the show, Matthew.
My mom says she listens to every episode.
I'm not talking about my sex life.
I mean, we wouldn't be talking about your sex life unless this is something you actively do. I'm just floating an idea.
Matthew, why are you like this? Anyway, so best movie ever made, right? 10 out of 10.
I love it.
I really like it.
It's a great movie.
It's no Dune. But...
It's no School of Rock.
Okay. But
it's no Avatar.
We all can collectively agree that the best, like, the moment that this movie gets good is when she punches him in the face in the bedroom.
I mean, that's when the plot when it starts ramping up, yeah.
Like, if I knew that timestamp off the top of my head, I'd be like, the War of the Roses.
It's roughly, like, 32, 33 minutes in.
Why do you know that?
Because I looked it up yesterday.
That's crazy. He knew I was bringing this up. You looked up He's like, I need to be ready.
That scene specifically?
Yeah, well, yeah, because that's the end of the first act. Okay. And I wanted to know, like, how long into the movie is the first act, and it's slightly longer than 30
minutes. I think the best scene's when he gets the hiatal hernia, because you don't really got a lot of representation in film for people with hiatal hernias. I think there needs to be more recognition out there. It does. Like, I've gone to, like, urgent care twice in my life, and one of them was because of my hiatal hernia had bloomed. Mm. And I almost crashed a car into a Rite Aid once. Because of my hiatal hernia.
Holy shit, dude. Because
it started acting up. I'm like, I have to go. And I was driving from work. And I'm like, ugh. And I'm just trying to get there to get some fucking omeprazole. And, like, I just almost went straight into the billow. I'm like tumbling out of the car.
If only you would have.
crash into the Rite Aid?
It would have been a great story. Could you imagine, like, you're at, like, a party or something, and people are talking about, like, dumb stuff that they've done in their lives, and you just whip up with the, yeah, I drove my car through Rite Aid. Like,
going
you win.
To. It's the brick wall that was crashing.
See? So. Yeah, see? If you would have went right through it,
I don't think I would crazy. Have.
What kind of car were you driving?
Subaru.
What kind of Subaru?
Legacy 2011.
You might have.
No, they build Rite Aid strong, because people have really strong sneezes because they're sick, and you want to blow the building down.
That's I don't think that's right.
That's true. My mom's a nurse.
So is Harrison's.
Physical
therapist. Well, I was about to add that on, but you had to interrupt me, white man.
Physical therapists don't deal with sneezes. If someone,
I can assure you that she's been sneezed on.
If she's helping someone learn to walk again, and they go, achoo, she's like, go to the sneeze doctor right this instant. I do not know how to deal with this.
So
I don't think that's true.
Different. It's like, you know, feet doctors don't know nothing about eyes.
They know a little bit about eyes.
Yeah,
they went through the basics of med school.
The eye is a mystery to a foot doctor. They're like, how see?
I don't think that's true.
Well, my mom's a nurse.
So we flashback. The story starts in a. The story starts like 18 years prior in a New England town.
In a meat cute, which I didn't think was that cute. I don't think it was a great meat cute.
No, but like it was fine. It
served fine, yeah. But he's like, it was like a fairy tale. I'm like, I'm not sure it was like a fairy tale. I know you're building it up for this guy so he doesn't get divorced, but like, it was all right.
No, it was like a fairy tale. The idea of like one scrappy guy who came from nothing falling in love with a beauty for money. That's like a fairy tale.
But the opposite. She didn't have a ton of money.
Yes, she did. What are you talking about?
She's working as a waitress.
After they get married?
Because he went to Harvard, right?
On scholarship, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That was like a whole scene.
I know, but I don't think she had... Did she say she had a ton of money?
Yeah, she came from money. She's paying her tuition because she was a gymnast.
I thought she got a scholarship for the gymnast.
She also had more money than him to pay for a statue.
Yeah, she also outbid him at like this crazy
event.
It
was $50!
Okay, but that was $50 back then.
Let me... You know what? Nah,
conversion rates go crazy.
I
want
to do conversion rates.
So, okay, to clarify, the way that like their love story is... It is like raining to beat hell on like this island. And they're both on there for whatever reason. I'm sure they probably like mention it or whatever. And to get out of the rain, they go into this like little tented estate sale.
320. Oh,
that's and nothing. So as a college student, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money now.
So I don't think it's a lot of money till it eclipses my rent. Then it's a lot of money. That's my opinion.
That I, you know what? I can understand that. I disagree with you. I think anything that puts a large enough dent in my wallet that it like makes my life difficult for a month is a lot of money.
That's fair.
Sorry. So they're at the auction.
Oh, right. So they go into this estate sale. And in the beginning, and this is what bothers me, right, is in the very beginning, because I'm willing to bet I'm the only one who noticed out of all of us. He's flipping through like the like little booklets that they hang out of the stuff that's going up for sale. And in the booklet, it like zooms in on like this little statue of like a goddess on her side, like posed all nice and sweet. And it says that it is a Chinese circa 1998 statue. Or 1798 statue, and then it flicks to when it actually goes on auction, and they say that it's an exquisite piece from Japan, and that bothers me.
Didn't even slightly.
I knew
notice.
You didn't.
Maybe the auctioneer's racist and just doesn't know.
I don't think that's true.
Maybe
anyway.
It was meant to invoke the feeling of being in Nantucket, where they don't know the difference between the Chinese or the Japanese.
I don't think this like minimum wage auctioneer cares.
Yeah, that's why I got it wrong.
I don't think he.
This is what happens when you remove DEI from America.
This was before DEI.
Exactly.
Anyway, so in this movie, they like go to like this little auctioneer place, and it starts out as like incredibly small. So it starts out like I think the first bid is like $10, yes. Right? And then that was from Oliver, right? He's like $10. And then Barbara's like 11. He's like, this bitch.
And then he goes to like 20 when he could have just went to 12.
No, he goes to 15.
Oh, he goes.
And then the random old guy from left field is like 20. Like, he just joins.
I think everyone should just go up by one. I don't know why you go such a bigger number.
To try and intimidate everybody else to stop bidding.
Yeah, I guess because you wear them out. How many times do you want to say numbers?
I can assure you, as somebody who grew up going to auctions, that doesn't work.
Why do you grow up going to auctions?
Because I grew up on a farm.
Oh, yeah.
I grew up next to the county fair, so like...
Yeah, like I can assure you, going up dollar by dollar does not do anything.
Being from Lakewood, I assume all auctions are for expensive antiques, so I'm like, why are you guys going to...
If you, like...
They're for some cheap shit.
Yeah, for some cheap shit.
I used to buy hats at auctions all the time and sell them.
What?
Yeah. I would buy boxes of hats.
At auctions?
Yeah.
At auctions and sell them on eBay.
It was a side hustle.
Were you like a street boy in 1940? That sounds like something you'd see at like a 1920s comic strip where it's like, come on, boys, we're going to go buy some hats.
But I would go buy hats at like yard sales and auctions and then I would sell them on eBay. I bought an auction once for like $15, I bought an autographed Dick Trickle NASCAR hat.
That's cool.
Do you sell it?
Yeah, for like $50.
The crazy little rascal life you live with.
I know. I can assure you that when you go to auctions, it is better to take the biggest step you're willing to take than to go dollar by dollar.
Yes.
Because then it's like showing everybody else that you're willing to take that battle.
I want
to
show everyone that I'm an insufferable asshole by going up $1 by dollar.
That's not even what you're... If you wanted to be an insufferable asshole, what you would do is you would wait until like the auctioneer was like going three times and then you bid. That's how you're an insufferable asshole. Nobody cares.
No, actually, depending on the item, you can't bid by $1. Yeah. You have to bid in increments.
What happened to America?
They will tell you the increments.
We used to be a fucking country.
Okay.
That's crazy.
So, Barbara buys the statue.
Yeah, Barbara gets a statue. And, like, the most insane twist of bidding, because after they go up to, like, 35, and so then Oliver's like, 40, and Barbara's like, 50, 50, and then, like, gives, like, this shit-eating look to him. And then he's like, sold to the pretty lady in the white sweater, right? So like she gets this fucking statue. And it's like the most cheap looking thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Granted, it's just like a movie prop, but like they could have done better.
It's a really small statue too.
Well, yeah, it was an antique.
I don't understand small porcelain figures for around the house.
I don't know.
He only understands small plastic men for around the house.
Because those are for war.
So it's... Okay. Oliver follows Barbara to her car. Or not
I'm
to
30.
Her
I have to get into either bourbon, war, or like cars. I'm gonna have to go buy the entire
so
band
Oliver
of brothers.
Follows
thing.
Barbara after she buys this thing, and he's like, "Oh my god, do you have any idea how much that's worth?" And she's like, "Don't care, not selling it." And he's like, $250, and she's like, "That's crazy. I'm just that cool that I figured that out without knowing that." And so she's like, "Oh, I gotta go catch my ferry. I gotta get back to the mainland." And he's like, "What do you go to the mainland for?" And she's like, "Oh, I go to school. I'm a gymnast. I'm so super cool, but like I'm not as good as I used to be." And he's like, you know, being a pervert. And he's like, but you look pretty good. Like, it's kind of crazy. So she does like her stupid handstand in a cemetery, which is crazy.
Why do you hate gymnasts so much?
I don't hate gymnasts.
He's like, I'm a really good gymnast. He does a stupid handstand. They hurt you?
She's doing a handstand in a fucking cemetery.
Is the gymnast a natural enemy?
He's horny on May next to a dead man.
Yeah, the graveyards are very horny places. It's why I rarely go to funerals. Are like gymnasts the natural enemy of the kickboxer?
No, I didn't even do kickboxing.
What?
Nothing.
What part do you want to unpack about that?
Nah, I thought about it for a second. I decided I want to unpack none of it. I'm not your therapist. I don't.
He's like, that's not my job.
I don't get paid $40 a week to listen to you talk about how horny and angry you are for an hour.
Yeah, it's great.
I do it for free.
I hear ashes to ashes, but you know.
Yeah, yeah. He like runs her down. He's like, wait, Barbara, I have a great idea. Don't go back and pursue your dreams and get a college degree. Come fuck me in a gross hotel. She's like, okay. And so then it like fast forwards.
That
like, what,
is a
six,
wild scene to me because they're me like talking about love and shit.
Yeah.
And like
they've known each other for like 7 hours.
If I saw a cool woman do a handstand in the graveyard, obviously I'm horny as fuck. Obviously I go fuck her to a gross hotel with a Harvard flag. But then if she's like, I think I'm falling in love, I would be out of there so fast.
Well, yeah, you're uncomfortable with affection. And
if you are talking about love the first time you fuck someone the day you met them, that's unhealthy.
She doesn't say that she's falling in love. She says, if this is the beginning of a love story,
shouldn't even be on your mind.
It's a great story. If it's not, I'm a horrible slut.
Shouldn't even be on your mind.
Yeah, and then he's like, oh, this is a story we'll tell our grandchildren.
Yeah, so if anything, he was the one who was talking about love.
Yeah, and if I was in her position, I'd be out too.
Men... Listen, he was definitely way more down bad than she was.
Yeah.
100% he was more down bad than she was. That being said, men in general tend to be more down bad than they should be so early on.
Simps, yeah.
And then it fast forwards like, what, 6 years? Something like that? 3 years?
If we're counting pregnancy, like 4 years.
Yeah, so like four years... They have twins. It's a boy and a girl. And they're like living in their humble little abode. It's like Christmas week.
The only scene in which I sympathize with the sympathize? That's a word. I sympathize with the main character. because I too, I'm just like, oh man, if there were kids making noise anywhere around me, I'd be upset too.
Yeah, they're just having a good time. They're ready for Christmas. They're hitting like their little Christmas drums.
What? They're kids being kids. Don't have children.
I never said I would. I'm just saying I get it, dude. I understand. Sucks.
To be fair, like, homeboy's trying to like work on like a contract. Like, he's trying to do like $1 million work, and his kids are like there, and they're just like, fuck you.
they are rude children. And I'm not saying that's their fault.
I'm not condemning them for it, but
they are particularly unruly children.
Like, this kid,
like,
grabs his paperwork off of his desk and, like, tries to hide it. He's like, nice try. And she's like, thanks. Like, what the fuck?
It's just kid shit.
Now, there's well-behaved children out there. They're polite.
Yeah, to their parents, they're still going to be, like, menaces.
No.
That's the point. That's why the phrase three-nager exists. Like, three-year-olds are a lot, dude.
No, 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 I was never three.
They want boundaries. You were born at 45.
Yeah, well, I was one, and I was two, then I was 45.
That's crazy.
Were you on the old island?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so Barbara comes
also
home from
pregnancy?
Her shift as a waitress.
There's like a pregnancy fetish in that movie. That's weird for me. And old. It's a pregnancy fetish.
Do you just talk to hear yourself talk?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's nothing I like more than hearing myself talk.
Anyway, Barbara comes home from her shift as a waitress on Christmas Eve, and she's like, all right, Oliver, stop working. Like, it'll be fine. Let's go for a walk because it's snowing outside and it's cold as shit. Obviously, they have to go for a walk. And he's like, nah, I should probably, like, you know, finish working. She's like, no, take a kid. Here's a child. Hands him a kid. Let's go for a walk. And so they go walking outside.
Oh, there's also the shitty star, which comes up later.
Oh, yeah, the shitty star. She, like, came home and she had, like, a bag and she got, like, candy for the kids. And she, like, hands it to him. And he's like, they're going to get fat. And she's like, no, they won't. Spoiler alert, they get fat later.
I gave a chuckle when the next time you see the kids, they're, like big.
Yeah, they're chubby kids.
But, and she got, like, this, it looks like it's made of tinfoil, it is, I'm on his side, that being sad, she, like, wants to put it on the tree, and he's like, no, that's fucking ugly, and she's like, you're right, my bad.
See, I'm on both, like, dude, it's your wife, dude, to make her happy. It is an exceptionally shitty star, like,
a shitty star.
I would let her put it on the tree, and turn to you, I'd be like, what the fuck?
We put, like, a fat owl on our tree, he's just chilling.
Well, you just, like, caught him outside?
Yeah.
What do you do with him during the year?
Shove him in a box.
Do you feed him?
No.
Jesus.
He's gonna be skinny.
Yeah, owl.
He's like 10. Well, not literally taxidermy. Like, this is fake. I would like to preface that we don't put an actual fucking owl on our tree.
I would like to preface that we do, actually.
You just shove him on there.
You used to ride the fences, I believe it.
Oh my god. And they get to like the corner while it's like there's like, what, a foot and a half of snow out? They're like, they're not walking easily. Like, they're pretty sliding. She's like, and he's like, all right, we're to the corner. Now what? Like, he very clearly just wants to go back inside. She's like, I want to go for a ride in your car. And he's like, I don't have a car. Spoiler alert, now he does. Because she, like, used the money from her waitressing job to, like, buy him a car that she had imported over from England, a Morgan, actually. And so, like, obviously the, like, cliche, oh, ho, 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 this is great. And my favorite, I think everybody's favorite, like, phrase from that scene should be, she's like, oh, are you happy? And he's like, no, I'm more than happy. I'm married, which is hilarious because it's a divorce story. And so then that is our next segue into the dinner party, right?
Yes, because the kids are 10.
Yeah, because they cut back to Danny. He's like, then he got a dinner party because he was grind set mindset.
Yeah, bro.
Also, like, it was really nice what she did. It was like, park the car a bit closer, man. The snow sucks out there.
She was a woman back then. She wasn't allowed to drive yet.
Push the car. You're a gymnast. You have strong legs.
So the dinner party comes. And it's like rich people because it's Oliver is an attorney. Yeah, the senior partners. Oliver is an attorney. He's trying to make partner. And so they're like pouring wine and stuff into a glass. And like one of them's like, oh, this is really nice crystal, but it's not Waterford. He's like, no, it's Baccarat. And they're like, oh my God, how the fuck do you afford that? And so he's like, oh, it's actually a really crazy story from our trip over to France. Barbara, why don't you tell it? Completely out of left field, by the way. Like, her mouth is full and everything. Like, it's kind of a dick move. So she starts trying to, like, tell this story, and he keeps, like, interrupting her to, like, correct, like, the tiniest, most minute details that genuinely didn't matter, to be honest with you. And so, like, he doesn't like how she's telling it, so eventually he just goes, so this couple ended up, calling off the wedding, and the wife, the bride, like, smashed her side, but we convinced the husband to sell the other side cheap, and that's how we could afford this such cool crystal.
It's So yeah.
Also, the whole time, Danny DeVito's just like playing with a foot.
He's getting a foot job from a woman named Elsie.
He's putting like food on the foot.
Under the glass table, by the way. Not hidden in any way, shape, or form.
No.
My favorite thing is that he puts food on the foot, and it's not like he's going to lick it off. He's just like, I like when the food's in the toesies.
Yeah, he like uses his butter knife to like cut her pantyhose.
Yeah, Oliver's really trying to impress the senior partners. He is hashtag hustling hard, but he is not hashtag staying humble.
He's a lawyer.
Right, but
name a humble lawyer besides the one southern one in A Thing to Kill a Mockingbird.
I would like to believe my cousin in Portland is a humble lawyer. He's like an environmental lawyer in like defense shit. He's like one of the good guys.
I thought you were about to say my cousin Vinny.
Yeah, he's like one of the good guys. So it's after the dinner party. They're having an argument where Barbara's like, yo, you're a dick. And Oliver's like, I'm not a dick. You know what? Actually, maybe I am a little bit of a dick. And then they laugh and go to bed happy. Yeah. So it's the beginning of the fracturing, but they're still like bonded together.
I mean, I feel like they're fracturing since that Christmas. I was surprised. I'm like, wow, this relationship's going bad. Like, almost immediately. They're already arguing about small inconsequential shit.
Well, you have to like remember that, like, obviously it is a creative decision that we only see that moment. Like, we don't see like the happy moment. We only get to see like the like shards of fracturing until eventually we finally see like the full spider webs.
I mean, I assume that's how all marriages go. I've never seen a happy marriage.
Also, the, if,
okay. That's crazy.
I've seen a few. Not
like
many.
Five divorces.
Not many.
There's like
I've
five divorces in my family in like two generations.
That's fair. I've seen a couple happy marriages.
My grandparents should be divorced. The whole time I was watching, like towards the end, I'm like, this could have been like my grandparents 100%, but they were cowards.
Like Danny DeVito's parents. They were together 63 years. A few of them good.
Hilarious.
Again, Danny DeVito. He doesn't play a character in this movie.
Yeah. But they got pregnant right away. So, like, they didn't really even get to know each other before. They may have gotten pregnant that time in the hotel room.
That's
unfortunate. That would, like, track on the timeline.
That's unfortunate.
But, yeah, they go to bed happy. They're laughing. Well, happy is a strained word there. But they go to bed. And so then up next is the funeral, the house funeral. Because Barbara is absolutely in love with like this big ass house that she passes all the time. She's taking her chunky little kids to practice.
They've become less chunky at this point.
No, they're still chunky.
They're chunky, but like the second time we see them, they're like big. And the next time they're chunky. They're just
but they put them into like sports. Like the girls in ice skating, the kids in soccer, you know, all the fun stuff. And she's like writing a note to tell the homely owner that if they ever want to sell, to like contact her because she loves the house, blah, 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 blah. And she like goes up to put the note on the front door right as like this other old lady like opens the door, and she was like, oh my god, thank you for stopping by, blah blah blah. And she's like, oh, I was just gonna leave a note. And she was like, oh, that's so sweet, you should like come in for a second, blah blah blah. And Barbara's like, okay, because yeah. So she goes inside and she's like, well, mother never mentioned you, but she had a lot of friends. She like holds her arm out to like lead her towards the coffin with this dead ass lady in it, and like it dawns on Barbara that she just crashed
the
funeral.
The hottest scene in the entire movie. Hottest scene. Only thing I think's hotter than a graveyard is a funeral.
Oh, yeah. You've mentioned that earlier. I refuse to unpack it.
Yeah, I'm not addressing that. And so we get like the seeds of the rest of their life where the old lady is like, what am I going to do with this old place? I just can't bear to sell it to some stranger. So she sells it to Barbara, who is some stranger, but she doesn't know, because very clearly Barbara had to have like lied to this woman. There's no way that she like told her, oh well, I'm just a random stranger. Like, there's no shot. And so they get the big ass house, which is this scene, which I think is ironic that they refer to it as the beginning of the rest of their lives, but then it ends up being the end of their lives. I think it's irony. But
well, it is the beginning of the rest of their lives.
Well, yeah, correct. Anything can be the beginning of the rest of my life. I can hold my breath for the rest of my life. I don't give a shit.
Like, no, but it literally is the beginning of the rest of their lives. Please don't.
But yeah, and so it's like a Saturday when they move in.
I don't
want
to pay all of the rent myself.
That's why I can't die.
That'd be a fun funeral. Like, how do you, if Geneva died because I said on a podcast, hold your breath as long as you can, and then she died. It's like a Geneva. I mean, I don't think she died doing what she loved. She just kind of held her breath too long and died.
She kinda died doing what she loves, being spiteful.
Yeah, honestly. But So she's like, all right, let's unpack the house. Oh my God. And Oliver's like, so I'm going to go to work. And she's like, it's Saturday. You can't do that. And he's like, I literally can. Bye. So he like leaves her by herself in this big ass house with her fat kids.
with these fat fucking children.
These fat
I will say, she gets a Saturday. He is a lawyer. Lawyers do work weekends.
Yeah, but
sometimes.
He was a partner. So, like, when you're a partner in a law firm, like, you make the rules.
Yeah, but, you know, they still, it's a, I just think it wasn't like, it's a weekend. I'm like, well, he's a lawyer, you know? It's, you could be like, today?
He's widowy a lawyer.
He's widowy a lawyer. And he go work really hard.
He wins the time.
He makes the laws.
He went to Harvard.
What do you think a scholarship was for?
What?
What do you think a scholarship was for?
Academics?
I think it was for woodworking.
I don't think it was for woodworking.
He's really good in shop class.
I don't think Harvard has a woodworking program.
I mean, they have buildings. Who builds them?
Architects.
Construction workers, actually. Either architects. One,
yeah. Architects plan the buildings, and then they hand them to people who got scholarships in shop class. They say, build Harvard for us.
Anyway,
he probably met Conan there. I think Conan was cut. When did this movie come out?
81.
Yeah, he could have met Conan there.
Anyway, so
famous.
She
Simpsons
goes
writer.
To start unpacking the house, and that's where we get one of the most key phrases in the movie, which I love Danny DeVito, and I love this movie so much. That being said, he was not subtle at all about the phrases that we had to take from each scene, because it flashes back to him talking to this dude who's trying to get divorced, and
he's just smoking a storm.
Yeah,
he stopped smoking, but then this case made him smoke.
He's like talking to him and he's like, Barbara worked her ass off to like build this house from the ground up while Oliver worked, right? Because he provided money, she did everything else. And then comes the phrase of, well, when you work for something so hard, eventually it has to come to an end. And so that comes into the idea. That's like, I think this is the biggest time skip, because we go from when the kids were 3 to 10 to 10 to 17.
Yes.
And they're getting ready to go off to college.
1989, Conan O'Brien graduated from Harvard in 1985.
You never even got to meet Conan O'Brien. Sad.
I don't think that's the saddest part of this movie.
I think it's top 10. Maybe He's, top 3.
I don't think it's even part of it.
Pretty sad. He's a cool dude.
So this is when we get to the biggest time skip. Kids are getting ready to go to college. Barbara is...
Do they age up? I feel like Barbara doesn't age in this movie until like...
Well, yeah, they just do different outfits and makeup. Like,
I feel like they age him up, though, because I feel like his hair goes gray.
No,
grayer.
They just took off the wig.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wigs. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. What the fuck?
I sometimes I forget wigs exist.
That's fair.
Why would you put hair on top of hair?
Sean it's Astin on plays the son.
That's what I was saying. I'm like, is that fucking Sean Astin?
Yes. Yeah, dude. So the kids are going to be legacies to Harvard.
Yes, these kids are supposed to go to Harvard. They're supposed to follow in their father's footstep and become like super great at what they do. But Barbara's starting to get empty nest syndrome. The house is big. It's going to be empty. She wants to start like her own catering business because her friends like paid her $35 for some pate. Because apparently she makes great pate. I've never had pate.
I was about to say, I've never had pate before.
Me neither.
But the way they make it look in this movie, you would think that they were like fucking this pate. But
it doesn't look appetizing.
I'm pretty sure it's just raw meat that's like ground up. And so she has to hire a live-in maid per Oliver's request, because if she's not taking care of the house and working, like somebody has to take care of the house and help with the kids because they're 17 going to Harvard, which is crazy.
That's when you're thinking about going to college. Or getting ready to, rather.
Well, yeah, but like the whole point of like the movie, like there's a scene later on in the divorce where she demands child support and they're like, oh, they're turning 18 in a year. Like they're freshly 17. Like they're
freshly 17 freshmen.
You can see you're in high school. You're about 17.
Yeah. Like they're still like in high school. Like they're not like.
Maybe because they're going to Harvard and they're rich. They skipped a grade.
Yeah, it's
they
true.
Could be very
I
smart.
Forgot. Yeah. I forgot that rich people have different rules. But so she hires this live-in maid who, fuck, what's her name? Sarah?
It's my favorite. I really liked her. I think that's who Danny DeVito marries in the end. That's
me
my
too.
Yeah,
that's
I'm pretty sure we're all in the same.
That's my headcanon, yeah.
I really like her. I me really like too. Her as this just poor person thrust into this situation.
She's taking classes.
She's just chilling, bro.
She's just really chill.
So they marry Sarah, their Hispanic live-in maid, which is crazy, by the way.
They hire. Danny DeVito marries her.
Yeah,
or
Danny DeVito marries
Barbara
her.
Barbara and Oliver hire her.
It's a polyamorous divorce.
It's no. See, that's the thing, is that they're on the verge of divorce, and so they try polyamory only for it to be the thing that crumbles their relationship.
No, yeah, not even a little. Polyamory. I would like to preface that this is all incorrect.
Oliver throws a Hail Mary of like, what if we become a throuple?
Dude, Oliver was in denial until his dying breath.
Yeah.
He was not girl bossing. No,
she was.
Oh, she absolutely was. She ruined this man's life, both literally and figuratively. So we hire the live-in maid. She lives in the house. She's doing like all live-in maid stuff. I don't know what that like entails. Because like obviously she's like cleaning and cooking and stuff, but does she like hang out with the family? Does she like
dusting, making meals for
making
the children?
Making the bed. You gotta remember, when you have a live-in maid, she's not just doing housework. She's doing like the above and beyond stuff. So you can be like, ooh, my sheets are always perfectly tucked, and everything's, you know, it's all the fancy shit that
tucking
they do.
Tucking the kids into bed at night and give them a little peck on the forehead.
They're 17. They're not getting that.
You don't. I'm sorry.
Anyone can have a peck on the forehead.
Yeah.
Cameron still comes over each day and gives me a little kiss on the forehead.
I don't think that's true.
Well, it is, so you're wrong.
I'm going to ask
him. Incorrect. You can. Ask him.
I'm going to ask him. Be like, do you come over every day to give Matthew a little peck on the forehead?
Before I go to bed.
Before he goes to bed. When he snugs his bed in a rug, tucked in bed.
Tucks me in.
I'm going to ask him exactly that.
He checks under the bed for monsters.
Okay, now I believe it. That is a bit Cameron.
And then when he leaves, he goes to close the door. They opens it a bit. He looks in and says, "Yeehaw, sleep tight, partner," and closes the door.
Is that because you have like all of his childhood photos of him in the
That was taken this year.
That one was this year.
There's a Christmas gift.
That is so
funny. Because that one's
funny.
A childhood photo of him, and he knows I really liked it. So for Christmas this year, I guess he went on vacation, and there's a place like that, and he's like, I have the best idea for a Christmas gift.
That was a
and
great idea.
And he was right.
That was actually a great idea.
Every time I look at it, it just brings me such joy.
So they try and thruple with Sarah.
No, so they have the live-in maid.
Which is, like, crazy, just trying to stop a divorce. That's what leads to a divorce.
And so it leads to the scene where this is where, like, the real resentment is, like, fully on, like, display.
Well, yeah, because Barbara is jealous of their...
No, not even a little bit. So Barbara gets this contract to cater a lunch for this big company. And she wants her husband, who is an attorney, to look over this fucking contract that she gives him a week prior.
But he's been looking over Sarah's contract.
Oh my fucking God.
That's his true love.
I don't think that's true. And so they're at dinner and she's like, hey, did you get a chance to look over that contract I gave you? And he's like, no, I'll look at it tomorrow. Or no, I'll look at it next week.
Or the weekend, I think he says.
Or the weekend, yeah. I'll look at it at the weekend. And she was like, that's okay. And then she stops and she literally goes, actually, no, it's not okay because I have to sign it tomorrow. So that's why I gave it to you last week. And he was like, fine, I'll read it now. Go get it. And she's like, no, it's fine. I'm sure it's fine. He's like, no, go get it. And she's like, fine, I'll stop everything I'm doing to go get the contract for you that I gave you a fucking week ago.
Yes, he just aggressively eats his dinner. Like, it's... Like, I get the fact that the marriage is failing and shit, so, like, it's a sign of neglect and resentment, but, like, you could have read it while you're taking a shit, dude. So many people would ask me to read their scripts in college, and I truly didn't want to, but I would just read them while I was, like, shitting, so I could at least be like, I read your script, here's my thoughts. It's a good time, you can do a lot of work while you shit.
So she goes and gets this contract, right? And she gives it to
Doesn't
him.
Doesn't appreciate saving time, this woman.
She's cleaning up the kitchen, she's doing the dishes. And so he's like kind of there hanging by the phone because he's like also expecting a call from like it was like the Larrabee account or something that he was trying. It's like multi-million-dollar account. He's trying to like confirm to be a, I don't know what the fuck that means, but
well,
I'm sure somebody
else
is going to
run for Senate, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it's like we're your retainer lawyer.
But yeah, he was trying to like win that over. And so he's like by the phone reading this contract and he like uses the contract to kill a fly and he hands it back to her with this dead fucking fly on it. And she was like, I admire your technique, right? Like, this bitch, she's over it. She fucking hates it.
Which is really
face.
Rude because he just gave her a delicious little snack because he knows that she works really hard and could use a little protein pick-me-up. How I read the scene.
So she's like trying to like wipe this fucking bug off of the contract because she does have to sign and give this back to her potential employer. And the phone call comes in for the Larrabee account. He's like, oh my God, Mr. Larrabee, thank you for calling. So obviously Barbara, being the girl boss she is, starts turning on every fucking electronic in that kitchen. Turns on the garbage disposal, the blender, everything to try and make as much noise as possible while he's on the phone. He's like, I'm gonna go to the upstairs phone, which pisses her off more. So she also turns on the other things, like the baby. Dishwasher,
he's
the ice maker.
He's literally a halfway graduated warrior.
I'm a little baby. The people said a baby couldn't be a warrior, but here I am. I'm a big warrior.
This is actually,
I'm married to a grown woman.
This is actually the early plot of Boss Baby.
That's the most problematic thing to me, is that Barbara's married to a baby lawyer. And she calls him multi-orgasmic, which is not a thing you should ever direct towards a baby.
I would also like to preface, right, that this contract is the first big contract that Barbara is supposed to sign for tomorrow. And it's a big deal. It is a huge deal. She keeps trying to talk to him about it, and she keeps blowing her off and blah, 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 blah. And it's supposed to happen tomorrow.
I didn't realize,
right?
Catering was such an intensive business.
Yeah.
I know there's contracts and shit.
And so he finishes up his phone call.
So we just gave them money and they gave you food.
Did you never work for catering at all for Kent?
Nah, they kept me chained to the grill.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I was not allowed to leave that grill.
He lived in pizza.
I lived in pizza and grill. I lived in the stations no one wanted to do, but I was like, I'll do it.
So he gets off his phone call. She's already like in bed. And he's like, I have such great news for tomorrow. I'm going to go have lunch with Larrabee. Like, she also doesn't have cool shit going on tomorrow, which is crazy. And this is where, like, a lot of the resentment comes in. So he's, like, hardcore coming on to her. She's, like, avoiding him at all points and times. To the point where he crawls on top of her. So using her gymnast legs, she tries to crush his fucking ribcage.
Which is super hot.
I knew he was going to say that. I thought it while I was watching this. I'm like, Matthew is jacking off right now.
Correct.
I paused it and jacked off. I didn't want to disrespect Geneva's movie.
We went to Golden Corral before this, and like when we were sitting there, I was like, do you think Matthew enjoyed the movie? He was like, I think it's 50-50. I was like, I think he loved it. This is like what he wants in a woman.
True. I like gymnast strength and abuse.
And so she like tries to crush his ribcage between her legs, which eventually lets him go. He's like wheezing. He's not doing good.
Also, does gymnast strength never leave you?
But we see her like doing stuff throughout the movie. Like, it's not like she's not active.
She's secretly training.
That's what I have to assume, because she remains to the end of the movie a fantastic gymnast.
You know how like men, when they get into that bad fight and they're banned from fighting, but they they have to do martial arts in their friend's basement.
What?
Have
you ever seen those bits?
Yeah.
You're saying in the way you say things about yourself. No. You're not an alcoholic if you go drink an entire bottle of vodka. Water, it's fine. Like, that's the way you deliver, like,
no,
critique,
but you know,
on yourself.
Like, men,
so I was assuming this was something that had happened to
men
you.
Men get, like, horribly hurt in martial arts tournaments, and then their mother is like, you can't fight anymore. And he doesn't know how to tell his mom, like, I got the spirit of a warrior. So he secretly trains in his Asian master's attic.
What are you talking? Is this a movie? Where's this coming from?
Is this like the plot of a Karate Kid movie?
Did this happen to you?
Yes.
Harrison, amongst all the people I know, people who would get in a fight, you're pretty near the bottom of that list.
I've been in fights.
It's wild to me. You don't have the soul of a warrior. You have the soul of a lover. You're like a big Teddy Ruxpin. I figured if you're about to get into a fight, you'd say, let's all sit down. Let's not fight. Now put on School of Rock. And we'll just have a good time.
So she crushes this poor guy's like rib cage between her legs, right? And what's wild
is... The Foley work's also insane on this.
Yeah. What's also fucking crazy is he lets him go and he tries to do it again.
Not crazy at all.
He did not learn his lesson in any way, shape, or form.
That made perfect sense to me.
And then was genuinely surprised when she like shuts off the lights and like rolls over and she's like, good night. And he's like, what the fuck's wrong with you? Like, dude, I don't think you can read a room.
This is the only time I can give him the benefit of a doubt, because if a woman crushes my ribcage, I'm assuming we're about to fuck.
And so then we get to see he's at lunch with the Larrabee. Oh my God. John Larrabee.
The Larrabee.
He's
on the Larrabee.
Larry Bird Larrabee?
I'm Widow with the Willoughby?
We're having a baby lunch. What does Danny DeVito sing about lawyers? Politicians, why are they all babies? Little geniuses shit,
so
dude.
He's at lunch with this guy, And he starts having extreme chest pains. They're like, oh my God, somebody call an ambulance. This man's having a heart attack.
Been there.
And he just has indigestion.
He has a hiatal hernia.
I know. No, I'm not actually
Matthew took a shit personal. Did you see
every morning I have to eat omeprazole or I can't do anything. I consume omeprazole.
So he thinks he's having a heart attack and he's like, call my wife. Like, it's this whole big thing. And he gets moved to the hospital. And in my opinion, the funniest scene in the movie is there's this other dude who's there who's holding like this rag to his stomach and he's bleeding profusely. Yeah. And he's like, my wife stabbed me in the stomach with a nail file this time. And he's like, you know, they always feel bad afterwards. And his wife comes in and she's like, I'm trying to find a doctor for you, honey, which is so funny.
So you think it's hot when women crush you. Do you think it's hot when they stab you?
No, it's too close to needles.
That makes sense.
Wild, like, line.
No. That makes sense.
I don't like needles.
In Matthew speak, that makes, no, yeah. I follow that.
Anyway.
I do, my favorite line is this line right after that, where they go to be like, are you okay, sir? He's like, help him, he's dying.
So they take Oliver in for x-rays and stuff, and on his way there, he's like, I need a piece of paper, because he thinks he's dying. And he writes out, like, this letter, where he's like, to my wife Barbara, everything I am and everything I have I owe to you, right? Like, these are what he thinks are his dying words. He doesn't die. He had indigestion.
He had a hiatal hernia.
Sorry, hiatal hernia. Matthew took
They probably gave him an IV of antacid, which happened to me, which sucks. I'm like, am I dying? And then they stick a needle in me. That's probably the worst day of my life.
He had a tiny bit of heartburn, and he forgot to take his Antac.
It's a lot of pain.
No, I'm not actually.
It's a lot of pain.
I'm sure.
You wouldn't think so it. You wouldn't think you could just take a omeprazole to stop a lifetime of pain. Like, it can't be that bad. And then you like forget to take your omeprazole for a few days, and you almost crash into a Rite Aid.
We are at, he thinks he's having a heart attack. He goes in the hospital. They're like, no, you're not going to have a heart attack. We're going to give you some of the antacids. You're going to go and your wife will come pick you up. And so he's sitting
You'll
for
be
like
surprised
hours.
How good you feel in like 20 minutes.
So he's sitting in this hospital waiting for his wife to come pick him up. And she never shows up. He ends up having to take the train home into the city.
His real bro shows up though.
Yeah, his
Danny
real
DeVito.
Bro. Danny DeVito, who plays Gavin, by the way.
Danny DeVito's
guy's name is Gavin.
Like, legitimately just a real guy this entire movie.
Yeah, Danny DeVito's the only real person in this movie.
Yeah, Barbara got the call and then left the day of her big contract and then decided...
She says, oh my God, I have to go.
Yeah.
Did she drop off the food at that? Because she says you're going to enjoy it.
She handed her the food, yes.
Yeah. She says that my husband's having a heart attack.
And so Oliver has to take the train home. He's pissed off.
It's a little boozed up.
When she gets home after him somehow. We're not... What she was doing in that time between... We are not clear, because we do hear like later she talks about it, how she was like on her way to the hospital, but then didn't go to the hospital. We don't know what happened after that. Like, we don't know. There's like a gap in time that we're not aware of. Not important, to be honest. And so she gets home.
Well,
he's...
obviously she went back to Sarah, the third member of the thruple.
Yeah.
And they commiserate.
Well, she was looking
there
for Sarah. She was
no
looking
thruple.
For Sarah, but Sarah was already at the hospital because that's her true lover. Because in any thruple, there's always like the third person, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's never equal.
That is what, that is what a thruple means. Yeah.
Anyway.
Three people.
It's not equal relationship.
Barbara gets home and she's like, oh my God, Oliver, I'm so happy to see you.
You just gave her so much more emotion than she
had. She genuinely was like,
she's
so
like,
deadpan.
Oh, I'm glad you're okay.
She's like, you have no idea how happy I am to you, right? She's like, getting undone. And he was like, you didn't come to the hospital. And she's like, no, everything was fine. Why would I come to the hospital? He's like, you didn't even call. And she was like, I called. I talked to somebody and they said you weren't dying. So I didn't go down there. And he was like, but I thought I was dying. She's like, but you weren't, right?
So if I ever have a heart attack in the hospital and you're not there, even if I'm not dying, I would, even if you're happy that I am would be dead, please come to the hospital just to tell me you're happy that I would have been dead.
That's my thought. At least go and tell him there, you know?
I'm not going to, like, first of all, I would not be happy if you died. Second of all, he didn't have a heart attack.
I'll be your Danny DeVito. I'll be there.
This is crazy.
Sadly, I do know. I do know he would be my Danny DeVito.
If you call me, I'd be there.
Wild escapades and everything.
You got a train.
This is the perfect Valentine's Day movie, by the way. Just so we're aware, this is the episode airing after Valentine's Day.
I thought we were doing Black History Month.
I'm glad for that.
We're ending with Black Klansman.
This is the best like movie that could ever be aired anywhere near Valentine's Day.
What about
whatever you're about to say is inferior.
VHS.
Inferior.
It's a nice scary movie. Get the blood pumping for fucking.
There's this whole big conversation. And he's like, well, I thought I was dying. She's like, but you weren't. He's like, fine, read this. So he hands her the note that he wrote in like the hospital where it's like everything I am, I like owe to you, right? She's like, aw. But you weren't dying. And he's like, this bitch, right? Like, he obviously doesn't say that. But like, he's like, fine, whatever, blah, 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 blah. And so they go, is it dinner next?
I thought they were going. Is there dinner? Or, yes. Yes, because it's really awkward. Because she didn't even tell the kids.
Yeah, they didn't tell the kids.
She didn't even tell Samwise that they were that it was time for him to go on his journey.
And the kids were like, you should have told us.
And she was like, well, everything was fine. I didn't want to freak you out unnecessarily.
Yeah, which honestly tracks. Kids are pissed because they're like, well, he was dying. She's like, he wasn't dying. Stop saying that. And so Oliver says some wild shit like, we're a family. Who's always communicating?
It's a serious condition. Can be passed down genetically too.
So Oliver says this wild shit where he's like, we're a family that's always communicated, which clearly they've never talked to each other before in their fucking lives. And so they go back upstairs for bed. They're getting ready. Barbara is sitting, like, Oliver, like, clocks out. This dude's exhausted. Like, he thought he was dying today. It was a whole big thing. He's clocked out. He's snoring. And Barbara's, like, sitting next to him while he's sleeping. And she's, like, trying to watch TV. And this man is snoring so incessantly loud. Now, I would like to point out that I've not related to anything in this movie until this moment. This man is snoring so incessantly fucking loud.
I don't know what she's talking about.
Harrison...
The windows rattle.
If I didn't know you and you're in a crowd of people and they said, point out the person who snores, I'd point at you without hesitation. You look like a man who likes, like when you snore, Z's come out of your mouth.
Listen, I love, the thing is though, is this man, Harrison 100% has sleep apnea. I would like to point this out. He refuses to go to the doctor.
I went once and they said I probably had it, but they couldn't conclude from the one test they did.
Yeah, so like he refuses to go and get diagnosed because it'll be incredibly loud. Like I can hear it from the basement.
Does it shake the bed?
It shakes the window. So
I almost Jimi Hendrixed myself last night. I legit woke up with vomit, like choking on vomit, and then like snorted it all out onto my pillow.
What the fuck? I was snoring?
It's bad.
Oh, you weren't feeling too well.
Yeah.
You were a little sick.
He was feeling a little sicky wicky.
But I woke Lilia up like... dead up. I felt so bad, but I was literally dying. I went from like whatever to like I was up, flipped over, and just snorting vomit onto my pillowcase.
Like it's bad.
That's
like
so wild.
He'll be snoring and it'll be like consistent snoring, and then it'll just go dead silent because he stopped breathing.
As a person who like can remember the last time they vomited and it was a while ago, nuts.
And so she gets pissed off at the snoring and she like shoves his fingers in his nose so that he chokes a little bit.
Which is a bit rude.
She could have just plugged the nose.
Yeah, I don't know why she put like,
her
whole
fingers in
there.
She should have just like went with her leg and kicked him or something.
No, well that would have been obvious that she did something.
Yeah. Because she immediately rolls over and pretend like she didn't do
anything. I think if you kicked me awake, I wouldn't know it was happening personally. I'd be like, what the hell is going on? And you could be like, you woke up, and I'd be like, okay. But I'm easily fooled, like a Looney Tunes character. If Harrison were to dress in drag, I think he's a hot woman.
So she chokes out her husband, so he wakes up.
Which is rude.
Yeah, it's rude, 100%. And she rolls over, pretending like she didn't do shit. And he's like, what's going on? Right? And so...
He's like, it's 3 a.m, turn off the TV.
Like, I think I realized...
Letterman.
Yeah, she's like, she has to turn off the TV.
It's Conan O'Brien's first season as writer.
We could have been on there if you were older. you would have met him in college, and this would be an entirely different movie.
I think his first season was 89.
We're big Conan heads here.
I talk about Conan O'Brien a lot at home. She's actually pretty tired of this right now.
I'm actually kind of tired of Conan.
He's great.
He's not.
He is.
He's pretty good.
Anyway, so she goes, "Oh my God, I think I know why I didn't go to the hospital." And he's like, "I don't even want to talk about this. Like, I just want to go to bed." And she's like, "Okay." And then he immediately starts talking about it more. And she was like, "Well, I was going to go to the hospital and I got onto the freeway and like I was terrified. I didn't think anything bad could ever happen to me, you or the kids or anything really. Like genuinely never occurred to me. And then I got this really strong sense that you had died and I was so fucking scared that I had to pull over." And he was like, "Oh, I love you too." And she was like, "I was scared. Because I was so fucking excited. I thought you were dead, right?" And he was like, "What?" And she was like, "No, like, I thought I was free. Like, I thought I was done. I thought you were dead." And he was like, "What the fuck?" Right?
That is the test in Daniel Sloss's Jigsaw, by the way. Is, do you ever think about how much easier your life would be if they just fucking died?
Daniel Sloss is ahead of his time. And so he was like, "What the fuck do you mean?"
I thought Saw for a second, and I was trying to figure out how this would apply to the movie Saw.
Give me enough time, I can make it. But he was like, "What the fuck do you mean you were happy I was going to die?" And she was like, "I hate you. I don't want to be married anymore. I want a divorce." And he was like, "What the fuck do you mean?" And she was like, "I hate your face. I hate when you talk. I hate when you eat. In fact, I want to punch you in the face." He's like, "No, you don't." She's like, "Oh, yes, I do." And he's like, "Then do it." So she punches him in the face, right? But this is the moment that the movie gets good. Like, the movie was okay all the way up until this point, but this is where the movie gets good, is the moment that her fist makes contact with his face. And so he's like, "Well, you wanted a divorce? You got it." And he, like, storms out, and she, like, sits down on the floor, and she's like, "Damn, that was easy." Like, it was, yeah, she gets what she wants. So Oliver hires his friend Gavin, who's Danny DeVito, to be his divorce attorney, and he's like, "We're gonna win this, right?" And they're like, "Yeah, we got this. Fuck that bitch."
I wouldn't hire
so
my friend.
They go to meet with Oliver goes to meet with Barbara's attorney, and Oliver's like, "What does she want?" And he's like, "Well, she wants child support." And he was like, "Kids are 18 a year, easy." And he was like, "She's waived alimony against my advice in exchange for the house." He's like, "She doesn't get the house. I bought the house. I bought everything in the house. That is all mine." He was like, "Really? Because I thought you said that she could have everything." And he was like, "Why the fuck would you think that I would say that?" And so he whips out the paper from the hospital where he was writing what he thought was his dying wishes and reads back to him where he told Barbara that everything he is he owes to her.
Which I don't, because earlier he says he didn't sign it.
Correct. That's why it's not legally binding. Yeah. That's why there's still any...
Like, it would not hold up in any court.
If he had signed it...
Yeah, it'd be fucked.
But. Yeah, he would be fucked.
Yeah.
But there's like, here's this thing, and he's fair saying, like, this
is
pretty...
It would be evidence, but you could easily argue that it was a heat of the moment, like, statement. That things you make when you statements you make when you think you're dying and statements you make in your day-to-day life are not going to be the same
thing. That's why anytime before I have to commit to something, I stab myself. So anything I say, it's questionable in court.
Sure.
I'm happy for you.
It's like how you can like drink before.
You don't even have to stab yourself. You just have to prick yourself with one of those diabetic needles.
Drink too, right? Because you can't be... Nothing you say while drunk can be used against. Like, it doesn't hold up in court, I'm pretty sure.
It depends. So, like, if you admit to something while you're drunk and there's evidence to, like, support that admission, then it can still be used against you. Mm-hmm. But, so that's in the moment in the movie where, like, shit gets real. Like, Oliver, it's like, you are lower than prehistoric frog shit, right? I think that's exactly
in New Jersey. I don't know why he has to bring New Jersey.
I don't
into
know
this.
Why.
The great state of New Jersey.
Have you seen its women?
Yeah.
That's what it's all about, man. That's what our founding fathers died for.
We are going about this divorce, right? They are starting to get into like the nitty gritty of it.
We are not going about
no,
a divorce.
We're watching them go about it. I have no intention on getting a divorce.
Well, I have no intention. I'm so kidding. I was like, I have no intention of getting married. I'm so kidding.
I like preface this by stating he has proposed at least 4 times.
Like twice.
And you turned him down?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cold.
Correct.
And then so after that, we go into the idea where they make Oliver move out of the house because they're pursuing a divorce. In order to pursue a divorce, they have to be like living separately. To which Gavin unintentionally signs their death warrant with this, where at their next meeting with Oliver, he like pulls out this massive like law book where it states that while pursuing a divorce, couples must live separate lives during like negotiations and stuff. But separate does not mean under separate roofs. As long as they don't share bed and board, they can remain under the same roof. So Oliver moves back in. And this is where shit hits the fan. They start avoiding each other. They like section off parts of the houses. One can't go into the other. There's like neutral zones. They have like a schedule for who can be in the kitchen when, so they don't cross paths. And so we get to the next like horrible portion of the movie where Sarah goes to Barbara and she's like, hey, do you have any sleeping pills? And Barbara's like, did Oliver send you? And she's like, no. Yeah. She was like, go to bed. So Oliver and Sarah are going out into the front yard where Oliver's like, fine, I'll go to a fucking drugstore at whatever time it is, because they don't actually specify what time it is, to go and find these sleeping pills. And Sarah's like, should I come? And he's like, dude, I don't care. So she gets in like in the car with him.
Wow.
And he is backing up and she runs over Barbara's cat and kills her fucking cat.
Goes with his second.
Yeah,
his
I was second gonna wife, say. Yeah.
Makes sense they go together. They're in a relationship.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, the third is the mediator between the two divorcing couples.
They're not a throuple. And so so they put the dead cat in a Ziploc bag, right? And the next morning comes.
Big Ziploc bag.
And Barbara is looking for her cat. She's got a little bowl of milk and she's going around. She's like, here, kitty, 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 right? She's trying to find her cat. And she's like, Oliver, have you seen my cat? And Oliver's like, are you talking to me? And then leaves because he knows what happened to her cat. And so later on, she's in the kitchen, like making dinner. He goes down. That's how you know they're rich is he has a sauna in the basement. So he's in his sauna. And Barbara finally like goes downstairs and like whips the door open. She's like, I know you know what happened to my cat. So what happened to my fucking cat? And he's like, well, you killed your cat. She's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And he's like, I ran him over because you wouldn't give me a fucking sleeping tablet. And yeah, I didn't see him. So you killed your cat, dumb bitch. So Barbara does, in my opinion, the only logical next thing. So she takes chisels from the workbench and traps him inside while it's still steaming. And then goes upstairs to make dinner because that's what you do.
I'd make it look more like an accident if I'm going to put his life at risk.
Nah, I'd have left him. Except
because you don't get the house, you go to jail.
She like comes to and she comes back downstairs and she like opens the door and she's like, what do you want me to do, Oliver? You killed my fucking cat. Don't know why you'd do that. You need to leave. And he was like, over my dead body. And then he passes out, right? And it's like this whole big thing because Oliver has his dog, Benny. And that's like his best friend. It's like he's seen petting the dog throughout the movie. And so it's like a cat person versus dog person thing, which is crazy. But Benny is still around and Barbara consistently calls him like the dumb dog and stuff. Like
they hate, he's never, cause he also throws a cat. They hate each other's animals.
Yeah, no, like he's mean to her cats. Barbara teases the dog, but she does not ever do anything like outwardly aggressive to the dog. Like pretending to throw treats is something everybody does to their dogs, even when they love them. I do that to Lilia all the time because I think it's funny.
I would never torture a poor animal like them.
It's not torture.
They just want some food. I'm going to give them food.
The thing is, though, Lilia can't.
They're living creatures here, too. They're not for my entertainment. God put them here so we could share the earth.
So Oliver has always been aggressive to the cat. Barbara teases the dog, but she never does anything outwardly aggressive to the dog, like Oliver throwing the cat, right?
Yeah.
And so this evolves into she has this upcoming big ass dinner party with some of her like biggest clients. And so she comes up with a reason to get Oliver out of the house. She like sends him like a note saying that the exterminator has to come and spray for termites at this time. You can't be in the house. And he finds out that she's lying. So he goes to Gavin. He is like, oh my God, she's lying to me, trying to get me out of the house. Like we got her. And so he's like, yeah, but she stole like two of my Staffordshire fucking statues.
Worcestershire
sauce statues. And any good dealer would give you $1,000.
Eggs Benedict so much.
And so he's like, she stole them to sell them to finance this dinner. I want her arrested and charged with being pressed. And Gavin, being reasonable, was like, do you have any proof? Like, we need proof to do this. He's like, whose side are you on? Because obviously being good at your job means you're picking sides. And so this whole conversation comes down where he's like, well, you have to, like, you guys need to stop.
Well, first, she tries to foot job him in his office.
Yeah, Barbara did try to sleep with Gavin.
That's when he gets back to smoking.
Which is hilarious because when she like takes off her shoe and like puts her foot like in the pit of his crotch, his words, not mine, to like try and seduce him, he's like, I'm gonna defeat since 82.
She also does a kip up, which really turns him on, which I understand. And then he breaks open his cigarette, because in the beginning, before he tells his sword tale, he's like, I gave up smoking. I didn't smoke for 13 years. I had my last cigarette put in the case, because I can't get to it. I can't smoke. But then Barbara walked into my life, and I started smoking again.
So Barbara tries to sleep with Gavin. Gavin rejects her, starts smoking again. Well, he's Oliver recording wants her arrested.
Because he says he's going to record it, so no one... Because he's like, this is a breach of ethics, which it is.
Yeah.
I'm going to record this, just so everyone knows what happens. So like, this is on tape.
Yeah, there was evidence of okay. this.
There's evidence that could show up in court when they investigated their murders of him saying, I've been in defeat since, was it 63? 82.
So Oliver's like, I want her arrested because she stole my figures. And he's like, you need evidence, dude. And he's like, I understand. I understand it now, right? So he goes to the door and he's like leaving. And he like leans back in. He's like, Gavin, you're fired, right? Because obviously that's the correct decision to make here. So he goes back to the house to crash the dinner party. So he comes into the dinner party in his pajamas, but he has on like a fancy suit coat and a top hat.
Which is pretty funny.
And he goes, sorry, I'm coming through with my wonderful wife. I should stay a little bit away because, you know what, I'm a little sick and I have like the sneezes. So he sneezes on the food and then he like hawks a loogie. Yeah. Yeah, he hawks a loogie into like this fucking tissue and like tosses it into the fucking fondue. And then he's like, excuse me,
I'm gonna go piss on the fish.
Which is his greatest crime. Which is his greatest crime.
It's his second greatest crime.
Ruining a fish dinner, unforgivable.
It's his second greatest crime. His greatest crime is attempting to rape his wife.
Correct.
It's like, it's a community scene where it's like, look, I can move past trying to rape our wife, but pissing on a fish dinner, you excuse raping your wife?
So,
dude, I love me. I had a dream once. I had a delicious fish dinner. Pretty close. It was in this movie. And then I woke up before I got to eat it. I ain't never been so mad.
Anyway, I wanted to eat my dream fish. And he pisses on this fish. And she comes in to like confront him. Somebody from the dinner party like is like peeking through the window.
They're really forgiving,
by the way.
Yeah.
They're really
pisses on the fish.
They're really forgiving. Because he comes back out. He's like, so there's like a family tiff going on. I don't think we have to leave. Don't eat the fish.
Yeah, I would recommend skipping the fish course.
She's a loyal client.
Like, that is crazy.
Her food must be fucking fantastic.
He's pissing on the fish while it's still like in the oven.
Yeah, he's on the
so
ladder.
So he's
with
pissing
the
in the oven.
Yeah.
It's getting splashed. That oven is unusable now.
It's immediately sanitized.
And so she's like, Oliver, really? And he's like, yeah. And now, since Barbara was going through...
It's true, man.
So Barbara had been going through a midlife crisis. She has like this big fuck ass like truck that has like the overhead lights and like a fucking
PA
intercom
system,
for you to yell at.
Yeah,
PA system. So she goes outside and she gets into her car. She like makes eye contact with Oliver while he's pissing on the fish.
Yeah, she threw the Volvo.
She threw a pot at him at this point.
Yeah. So she's in her truck looking through the window, making eye contact with him while he pisses on the fish. So she floors her truck in reverse to hit his Morgan, right? And he's like, what the fuck are you doing? So he like runs outside while she's like doing some fucking crazy monster truck shit. She like shoves his car out into the front yard. The clients are now coming out together in the front yard to watch this going down. And Oliver's like, do you see this? Every single client in the front yard's like, fuck yeah, we do. Like, they're all witnessing this. Nobody's doing anything. Like, somebody 100% should have called the police.
What are they?
Nobody does.
I was going to say, what are they going to do? I'm like, they can't stop a truck.
They definitely could have called police. Nobody does. And so the most fucking crazy scene in full.
They probably don't want his dog to be shot.
The dog doesn't die.
Yeah,
the dog is yellow-furred, not brown-furred.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they kill any dog.
They're particular to brown dogs.
I mean, I think that they have favorites, for sure. I'm not saying that they aren't, like, get a little bit more giddy when they shoot a brown dog, but like every time you hear a dog involved with police, it's not happy.
But so this wild scene unfolds where Oliver is trying to save his car and Barbara's just fucking his car up. She's like slamming it with her truck. She's going all over it. And at one point in time, she has they're like nose to nose on the road. She's like, and Oliver gets into his car and she like uses the PA system on her truck. She's like, get out of the car, hun. And he's like, no, like you have the guts. You wouldn't dare. She's like, I'm serious. Get out of the car. And he's like, you're a fucking coward. You wouldn't. So obviously, like the girl boss she is, she fucking floors it and slams into his car.
She's really risking her chance to get this house. There's so many witnesses. And if she had killed him, she's not getting that house.
She absolutely should have, because she slams the car against the fountain.
No, if he died, she'd go to jail.
Actual mountains, like literal fucking monster truck. She like scales on top of this other car and just like smashes it down.
Is pissing in the fish just cause?
Yes.
I don't think it
would hold
in court.
I would monster truck your car if you pissed in my fish.
No, that's at most, it would be considered a crime of passion, but she'd gone off. There's a lot more happened. It wouldn't hold up in court.
But
it wouldn't even be manslaughter.
If she got Johnny Cochran, then absolutely.
Well, yeah, she got Johnny Cochran, 100%. But, you know, she doesn't have, she'd have to fuck him. Cause she says she doesn't have enough money to pay for him. She barely has enough money to pay for Gavin. That's why she goes to fuck him.
Do you think Johnny Cochran's in defeat?
100%. No. Not a doubt in my mind.
No.
He looks like a feet kind of dude. He looks like he wakes up thinking about piggies.
I think he's into hands. That's why he took the OJ case. As soon as he heard about the glove, he's like, OJ, you got me. I'm in.
The fact that there's not a punk song called Johnny Cochran's Thinking About Piggies is a travesty. I want to make a punk band just so we can write the song Johnny Cochran's Thinking About Piggies.
Oh my God, we can name the band Pissing in the Fish.
Hey. Is that the only song? Or?
No, that's our first. That's our first.
I don't want to waste a band name called Pissing in the Fish on
just one song.
A sister band of Bowling for Soup on one song.
Yeah, bro. But so she crushes the shit out of his car and somehow he lives. He gets out, right? And he's like, I don't know why he thinks it's a good idea, but he takes like a tire iron and like tries to like hit her truck. So she just leaves. Like she's like, all right, I'm done here. She just dips, right? Dinner party leaves. While they're gone, he like destroys the oven. So he lights this oven on fire and she comes back. She's like, I expected more creativity from you. And so he's like eating like, I think it's like pudding or something. He's like, this is really good. They would have loved it. She's like, I know. So she goes into the other room. She's like, I'm gonna go clean up, okay? She goes in there and starts smashing priceless antiques.
The Worcestershire sauce.
Yeah, the Worcestershire. The Staffordshire, dog fucking antiques. She just starts smashing the shit out of them.
They're dogs. They're not dog fucking antiques. They're fucking dog antiques. I just want to be clear that this man's not into antiques that fuck dogs.
We don't know that.
I don't think he fucks his dog.
You
can look at a man who wants to fuck a dog and you know.
That's crazy. That's our second song. You can look at a man and know if he wants to fuck a dog.
Parentheses, and you know.
And you know, yeah. But so this is where the first like full combat, I wouldn't say combat, but this is where like the first contact scene comes
in. They just had car combat. They had Mad Max combat out in the front yard. Put Furiosa's track over that. You're going to be like,
so
Australia.
She's smashing figurines and he's chasing her.
You can give me a look.
Trying to stop her, right? And it doesn't work. He like chases her up the stairs and he like grabs her dress because she's in like this fancy dress for the dinner party. So she grabs her dress and fucking yanks her ass down the stairs. But she's like a girl boss. So she like mostly cartwheels down. But like she still lands pretty hard. So she gets like bruises and stuff. So like the madman he is, he starts collecting these fucking figures and like puts them all in his room and like guards them because they're that important.
After she falls down, he's like, all right, I'm going to bed. Good night.
Good night. And so while he's like sleeping and guarding these, he like wakes up and he's like, where's my fucking dog, Benny? Right?
Did we talk about the Christmas tree catching on fire?
No, we completely. No. The kids have all left.
Yeah, the kids have all left at this point.
It's like college orientation or something. Like they're gone.
Yeah.
Sean Astin, Samwise Gamgee had his moment with his father where he's like, I'm mad at you, Papa. You didn't tell me about The Hobbit before it. Like 20 years beforehand, I could have been a star. And then he forgives Michael Douglas. He forgives the man from Wall Street.
Michael Sheen? Charlie Sheen. He's in Wall Street.
So is Michael Douglas, I think.
You are correct, yeah.
Okay.
But, so the kids are off. There's this whole big thing where the Christmas tree lights on fire because of the lights Oliver's like, it wasn't because of the lights. We don't know that. And Barbara's like, okay, dumbass. Like, clearly it was the lights, but whatever. But
I initially assumed it was the big star.
Why?
Tinfoil seems flammable. You need to start fires.
Anyway, so we're in this like scene where he's like, where the fuck is my dog? Dog's gone. And so we're to the point now where Barbara's like, you know what? I'm going to have a little itty bitty dinner party because like she needs him out and she's trying to convince him to leave. So she's like, we need to talk. Meet at the kitchen at 8 p.m. Right? And so like oddly formal, he like writes back on the little note that she leaves on the stairs. She's like, Oliver Rose will attend, right? So they go to the dinner party and they're talking. And Oliver's like trying to flirt with her and be like, oh my god, we could totally like make up and blah 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 blah, right? And she's like, no, no, I want a divorce. I don't like you. I want to be gone, right?
Yeah, she says it. She says it exactly like Andy Kaufman from Taxi.
Yeah.
That is exactly, that's how they talk in the entire movie. He's like, I think we should try to fix up the marriage. I think we should try to fix it up. She's like, nah, I want to be gone.
I want to be gone.
I'm widowy, a warrior, widow Harvard. I widowy want a divorce.
I widowy want a divorce. And so he's like, No,
Oliver, I want a divorce.
She had made this food and he brought wine. And there was like the joke that it was poisoned, but obviously it wasn't. And he's eating this pate on these stupid little crackers. And he's like, I don't believe that we have gone past the point of no return. She's like, I have. He's like, no, I don't believe you. Because anybody who makes pate this good can't be all bad. So she leans in and she's like, it depends on what the pate is made of. So he stops chewing and he's like looking at her. She's just like, woof. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like implying that this is the dog. So he's like, Benny? And she's like, a good dog to the last bite, which is hilarious, by the way. So he gets pissed off and flips the table, which we then get a cut to outside where the dog is perfectly fine. He was just taking a nap in the yard.
Danny DeVito did say that's the ghost of the dog.
No, the fuck he didn't.
Mm-hmm. I called him and asked.
Anyway, dog is fine. She didn't actually do it. She saw her opportunity and like called a bluff. He did not catch the bluff. Fully believes her.
He died thinking he ate his dog.
Correct.
She could have died there. He could have killed her. That would be the dumbest way to go.
He tried to. So this whole thing goes down where now it becomes this giant game of cat and mouse.
It becomes like Home Alone, but they're all in the house.
She hides up in the attic. He's like hunting around trying to find her, carrying around this tire because he's probably going to like beat her to death. And it was really funny because at one point in time, like this old clock stops ticking. So he goes to wind up the clock again. Because they are both 100% in like this manic episode. And so she's in the attic and she screws like this hole through the ceiling so she can look down. And while he's like winding up this clock, she's like, I'll give him the chandelier. And she's going to drop this fuck ass big chandelier on his ass. So she loosens the bolt, but she's not fast enough. So he walks away.
Should have used her piggies. Should have gymnast piggies.
Should have. But so he is looking for her and he hears like creaking from the attic. So he goes up there and he like hunts her down. After one, he steps on a rat trap. Hilarious.
And he sets off
30 of them because for some reason there's 30 rat traps like right next to
each other. There's probably 30 mice up there.
There's not 30 mice up there.
It's probably, she probably set them to let her know when he like gets up there.
That's fair. And so he ends up finding her. And this is where the most uncomfortable scene in the movie is because he attempts to rape his wife, right? He's going to. He's like, oh my God, I needed this, right? Like, it's so weird. And so she does the big brain thing and she starts playing into it. And she's like, no, don't talk, blah, 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 moaning, all that fun stuff. She's like, let me see, which a nickname for his dick, which is crazy, is the Bald Avenger, right?
Because they say it she says it at the hotel room also.
Yeah, when they first fucked in the hotel room. And he's like, oh my God, you haven't called it that in years, right? And so there's this whole big scene where she's like kissing down his chest, down towards it. And he's like, oh my gosh, Barbara, yes, yes. And then she bites his dick.
And then like...
Wheelbarrows him.
Yeah, she fucking like... She grabs his legs and starts sliding him across. And
literally plows him.
Yes, and he like crushes all of the boxes that he had to stand on to get into the attic.
Yeah, she like girl boss all over him. Right?
If someone called my dick the Ball Avenger, I think I would leave.
Until I had watched that movie with the subtitles, I thought it was the Bold Avenger.
Don't name my dick. It's weird.
This is a full war zone. They're actively trying to kill each other now.
He barricades her in the house.
Yeah.
He like rinses his bleeding dick off with the bidet.
Yeah.
We've all been there.
That's great. I don't think so. So like Matthew said, he boards her into the house. No, not that we've all been there. He boards her in the house. He like takes the shutters off. He like nails the fucking dining room table against the window so she can't get out, and a bunch of other stuff. But Sarah had forgotten something. I forget what it was. She forgot something in the house, and she like crawls in through like the single
boyfriend.
Shut up. Through like the single open window. And he finds her and he's like, Sarah, let's go outside, right? And she's like, where's Mrs. Rose? Like, what's wrong with Barbara? He was like, she's fine. And like the house clearly a fucking wreck, right? And she's like, I don't think so.
The stove has been torn apart to where it is a Mad Max machine.
It's one of my
just like blaring open giant flames.
It's one of my favorite moments because like, I'm doing something right now. He's like, where's Barbara? She's fine. She's like, where is she? And he's like, Barbara, Sarah's here for you. And she's like, I'm doing good.
Never better.
Never better. So he like unboards the front door to like let her out. And she's like, Oliver, you should come outside with me. And he's like, yeah, I'll come outside with you. Yeah. And like, so she steps out. He like takes a few steps to follow her. And he like stops. He's like, oh, I forgot something. And she's like, what? And he was like, Barbara. And then shuts and locks the fucking door, right? Which he is now drunk off his ass a few minutes later because he is like sipping the shit out of this like wine. And he's like doing that like, that wine glass thing where you like get your finger wet and like trace it around the top and it's like making music. And so he's like sipping it to get it to the right. Is that what it's called?
I think.
I didn't know that. Anyway, or so glassing. He's like making his weird little drunk symphony that's going on here, right? Barbara comes out of the attic. She's upstairs and like...
She's like, what fresh new hell is this?
Yeah, she's like, what fresh new hell is this, right? Like, it's fucking crazy. And so he sees her shadow because she walks past the window. So he uses this fucking random spotlight he apparently has and points it at her. He's like, I have a surprise for you. She's like, what the fuck do you have? And so he pans the spotlight over to like the very top of the stairs where it's that fucking figure that she outbitted him on at the beginning of the movie. So she goes to grab it. Of course, in true like fucking Acme nature, he like has it attached to the string. He like yanks it around and like catches it. And he's like, I'll tell you what, if you say it's mine, you can have everything in the house. And she's like, okay, it's mine. So, of course, he's pissed because, like, he just got outsmarted. Like, I mean, you should have seen that. You're an attorney. Be so for it. So he gets pissed off, smashes a bunch of shit with tire iron, hits the figurine with it like a baseball bat. And one of the shards hits Barbara and he immediately feels bad. Like, he runs upstairs. He's like, Barbara,
she pretends to have the shard hit her.
No, it hits her. Like, she has blood on her face.
I saw it go in the direction. I didn't see it actually hit her.
Yeah, okay. No, like, you see blood on her face, like, the rest of the movie
Fair enough.
And so he goes up and he's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, Barbara. So she grabs a tire iron and fucking clocks him in the head with it because fuck him. And so he tries to grab her and this whole scene unfolds where to escape him, she leaps from the top of the stairs onto the chandelier. And she's like hanging there like upside down because she's trying to like get her legs up there so she can pull herself up. It's this whole big thing. And he's like, don't damage the floor on your way down, right? So she manages to pull herself all the way up and she's like, ah, comfortable, that's better. And he's like, you know what, fuck you, I'm gonna save you. And in true men fashion, and this is attack on men, in it's true okay, manly
we're
all fashion
we're all women here now,
he like tries to use the tire iron to like hook the chandelier and pull it over to him. She's like, it's not gonna work, it's heavy. And he doesn't listen, as men do. So he hooks onto it. It's too heavy and it pulls him off, right? So he has to climb up onto the fucking chandelier so he doesn't fall as well. So he starts trying to swing the chandelier back towards, like, the actual stair, like, that second level so that they can get off. And she's like, stop. You can't do that. We're going to fall. I loosened the bolt because I was going to drop it on you. And he was like, oh, that's good. And so now we're at, like, the end of the movie because Sarah calls Gavin.
Her future husband.
Future husband. We're all in agreement on that one. She calls Gavin and Gavin shows up and they like see them through like the upper window and they're like, what the fuck are you guys doing? And they're like, get a ladder, because obviously you get a ladder instead of calling for like the authorities. So they go to get this ladder, but it's too late. Like, we see like the creaking of the ceiling, some things are snapping, the like wires are coming down, and so when it like it drops a bit when it initially starts loosening. And Oliver's like, we're going to be fine. Each of those wires up there, because there's two big ass fuck off cables that are holding the chandelier. He's like, each of those cables probably hold about 200 pounds, which he is correct. Each of those wires probably hold about 200 pounds. And they probably weigh a little less than 200 pounds. But then he forgets that like the chandelier itself weighs something. So the whole thing snaps and they go plummeting straight down to their deaths.
Well, first he's like, I just want to let you know, I know this is crazy, but I've loved you this entire time. And I know you've loved me, right? And she gives the slightest head nod as like a, I mean, yeah, like.
At one point, she absolutely did.
Their death's a bitch move. I watched it. I could survive that. I'd be fine falling that far.
But
it goes down a bit to begin with. They're close to the ground.
It's the, it catches in, like, it's, you would get caught in the metal on the bounce back up and like it would break
something. I'm un-Gwen Stacyable.
No, you would break your neck.
I'd be fine.
But the thing is about like 100%. Their death is like we see them like bounce, which personally I think was just effect-wise well done. Like, yeah. They bounce. I think it was very nice. So they're dead on the floor, and so there's a scene after we see them like crash on the floor.
They're dying.
Gavin and Sarah, it like flicks briefly outside to Gavin and Sarah like holding this ladder, and they're like, "We're coming!" Like, and then it flicks back inside where they're dying. And Oliver reaches out, and in like one of his final breaths, puts his hands on his beloved wife's shoulder, and so Barbara reaches up to his hand. And like puts it on it for a second, and then in true girl boss fashion, shoves that off because fuck him, she doesn't need it, right? Because
women live longer than men, statistically, so she has the option to do that.
Plus, exactly. She was a gymnast; she could like she couldn't completely keep everything from breaking, but she could.
Why didn't she do a somersault in the air and land on her feet?
I think Barbara should have survived. To be honest,
I think they both should have survived. I don't think that was a deadly fall.
No, I think Oliver dying 100% because like the way that the chandelier was set up, like his head wasn't like supported by anything, so like his head 100% like ate that impact. He was dead. Barbara was in a lot better position. Like I feel she definitely shattered something and was probably paralyzed, but I think she should have survived.
Sure. I mean, I agree with you, but like those kids needed to be orphans.
That's crazy.
What?
That it needed to happen for what? The because
for what?
Because how else are they gonna grow up? How else are they gonna have the hustle if like they didn't have adversity their entire?
Yeah, they don't need daddy's money. They need suffering.
Yeah,
they probably have life insurance policies.
They're not 18, and it would probably pay out when they turn 21.
Okay, so still getting all the money. They get anyway. Anything. Everything goes to them now.
But for those 4 years, they gotta stay humble, hustle hard.
Facts.
Honestly, it's the best thing. It is the best thing he could have done for his kid in his last moments. Was like,
anyway. So I mean, they're right, like,
every successful person in America clearly an orphan.
I mean. Alexander Hamilton.
Oh my god.
That
list ended real fast.
There's no momentum. There's like you didn't have much momentum going in, and then you just stopped.
But so they're like dead on the floor, surrounded by like the shards from this like crystal chandelier and stuff, right? And so Gavin and Sarah finally get in through the front door, to which Sarah obviously goes, "Oh my god, they're dead," because we didn't know they were dead.
And then they start kissing.
And Gavin, like, lights up a cigarette because, like,
they're about symbolism. To fuck.
Well, first they have to raise the children the last year.
Yeah.
And then they fall in love. And then they're together for who knows how long. I'm guessing a few years. And then
they say how long they're... He's been married for 23 years or something.
No, his parents were married for...
60-something. 63 He says years. He was married... I think he says how long he's married for. Maybe it was like 8 years or something.
But maybe. So it does go back to Gavin talking to this dude in his office like years later. And he's like, so the moral of the story is nobody's going to win in this divorce. And I'm going to encourage you to give everything to your wife to the point of night sweats.
Yeah, he's like, he finished or fix the your story. Marriage. Yeah, he finishes the story and he's like, okay, now I'm officially charging you from this moment. Like, our time starts now. Here's my advice.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm just going to give it all to your wife. You just, the goal here is to get out of this as quick as possible.
So that man got $900 of free lawyer counseling.
Yeah.
And then maybe paid for $30 of lawyer counseling.
Yeah. And so he was like,
or do you think he paid for the full hour?
I think he paid for the full hour.
Still $450.
Like, attorneys, yeah, like that's a steal for the amount
saved
of time
his marriage.
It. But yeah, no, and so the dude like decides that he's going to go save his marriage instead of getting like a divorce, and like so it's a happy ending for him.
Very Catholic film.
Yes.
But we have like witnessed like this tragedy from like start to finish, and the results thereof. That Gavin states that he worked very hard to keep out of the papers. Me personally, I would have like made sure that shit was in the paper. But that's just me.
And then he sees the Capitol building in the most punk move ever. He flicks his cigarette towards the government as if to say, fuck you. And then he calls Sarah, is like, I'm coming home, sweetie. And then he leaves.
And that's going to be our third song, is Danny DeVito is actually really punk rock.
We need like, what, 9 more to have an album?
Give me enough time, I can sit down and get it. My job is just to name the songs. Like, I don't have anything to do.
I want to write a rock baller called Harrison Poole, the Rodeo Clown.
Okay. And then it's funny. Credits roll, right?
And then credits roll, yeah. And it's like a really bad rendition of, I forget what ballad it is, but it's like a really...
Harrison Poole, the Rodeo Clown.
No.
I did the music for this movie.
And it's genuinely a great movie. It is one of my favorite movies of all time, and I think everybody should see it at least once.
I love this movie a lot. I'm contractually obligated to love this movie a lot.
Yeah.
That being said, I do love this
movie. Gun to your head, you love this movie.
No, I... Yeah.
You want one?
Gun to your head, you better love this movie.
Can't put a gun to... Do you want a gun to put to his head?
That is a wild offer. No.
Okay.
Danny DeVito quietly is a really good director.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Even if all of his movies aren't bangers, he has War of the Roses, Hoffa, and Matilda. Like, those three alone are like, you're very quietly a great director.
It never fails when I introduce people to this movie, because I found this movie off of sheer luck. Because the first time I had seen this movie had actually been on fucking VHS. And I had got it out of a box of other movies that my mom got from a garage sale. And so I love the fucking movie. And every time I ever convince people to watch this movie is always the same thing where I go, Danny DeVito directed it. Yes, I know that's funny, but I promise it's good. The first 30 minutes is going to suck.
It's
just really hard to watch.
I know it's called Blackula.
I promise it's good.
And then it never fails. We get past the 30 minutes. She punches him in the bedroom. And then everybody goes, this is a great movie.
See, I don't even... I like the first 30 minutes.
It's not bad.
It's just all built up.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's just all information that you have to take in really fast.
Yeah, well, you have 33 minutes of, like, info dump so that you can have an hour and a half of just, like, raw erotic anger.
And it works. It works so well.
I think the true anger comes in at, like, 45.
Sure.
Something like that. And we see man piss on a fish.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like the peak of the movie.
Matthew gets to see a woman crush a man's ribcage.
Yeah, that was great.
I got to see a monster truck. There's something in this movie for everybody. I got to see a monster truck scene. Matthew got to see her crush his ribcage with his legs. You saw a dog.
Just a dog. I love this movie because there's a dog in three scenes.
Yeah.
It's not...
Today, I saw a balloon.
Yeah, it's not quietly like a craftsman-like...
Now, most of your movie reviews come down to whether there's a dog or not, dude. I don't know if you notice.
Okay.
That's crazy. But, no, it's genuinely a wonderful movie, and I highly recommend it to everybody I've ever talked to ever. I'm biased, one, because it is my favorite movie ever, but it is genuinely a great movie, and it did not do well when it released in box offices. Like, it really didn't. It was pretty unknown for its time. Like, it made its money back, but it wasn't, like, breaking. Like, it wasn't, like, crazy good.
It's a really good movie, but it's not one of those movies that, like, do bangers.
I forget what else released at the same time, but it would have done a lot better had it not
James Cameron's Avatar.
I don't think so. Because I know it released next to something. I'm, like, looking it up now. It released next to something.
It made 160. No, this was a success.
No, but, like, it wasn't, like, a blockbuster. Like, it did okay. Like, it's not, like, crazy
160
good.
Million is a blockbuster.
I think she wants it to be, like, a Jaws or something. I'm like...
Yeah.
No,
it made
like,
87 domestic.
It's a movie about a divorce. It's not going to do bankers. It's going to do well. It's not the Titanic.
It made 9.5 million its first weekend. That's a solid opening.
Yeah,
weekend.
No, like they did good. Like they did, they weren't amazing, but they did good.
It was ranked number one, the number two, the number three that Christmas, and the number one that New Year's. It steadily was in the top five until February, and then it started to like
and then
slow
it
down.
Died. Yeah.
But no, there was a solid 3 months where this movie was making like.
Yeah, no, like it was a good movie. It's just not.
It came out along Back to the Future 2 and Christmas Vacation.
Yeah.
It beat out Back to the Future 2 its opening weekend. This but movie did
thing.
Well.
But that's the thing is, like, if I ask somebody, I'm like, hey, have you ever heard of Back to the Future 2? They go, yeah.
It has
if
not.
If I go, hey, have you seen The War of the Roses? They'll go, what's that?
It has not a. It has not become in the cultural zeitgeist in the way. Yeah. But to say that this movie was a box office disappointment.
I didn't say it was a disappointment. I said that there were ones that did better around it. Like, they did good. They made their money back.
And then some.
It did okay for, like, 3 months and then immediately got overshadowed. Because Back to the Future 2 made way more back than The War of the Roses did. Because they did fine for, like, the first 3 months. But those 3 months is all The War of the Roses made. Whereas Back to the Future 2 still makes money to this day.
I'm going to do socials because I have to go piss on a fish dinner.
I also want to go piss on a fish dinner.
We can piss together.
Oh my god, we can hold hands!
I was about to say, we can hold hands! Oh my god, twins! Alright, if you want to find me... No, I don't do me first.
I'd rather piss on a halibut.
Why do I do me first? I like a nice salmon.
A salmon? Oh, I could go for pissing on a salmon.
You can find us on Instagram where we'll share a video of me and Geneva holding hands pissing on a salmon at Two Men Movie Podcast. If you want to see the YouTube reaction of Harrison complaining about me and Geneva pissing on a fish while holding hands, that's Two Men and a Movie Podcast. If you want to write in on your recipes for future fish dinners for me and Geneva to piss on while holding hands, that's twomenmoviepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on most things, Two Men Movie Podcast. That's our steady URL. If you want to find me, where I'll post my POV of me pissing on a fish, I'll do zooming on the hands. I'll be like, friends. That's Midwest_magician. Harrison, where are you going to post your rebuttal to us holding hands and pissing on a fish? How the table turns! How the love triangle turns as we hold hands and piss on a fish. Now you're the third wheel!
You can find me on Instagram and TikTok at harrisonpool.com. POOLEDOTCOM. harrisonpool.com.
It sounds like he's angry about his pissing, but he's angry about the box office.
He's
thing.
So much no, more angry I'm about just
the box office. So, he's so annoyed by the box office.
I'm just annoyed. So I'm not even annoyed. I'm just, I mean, I'm annoyed at the bit, but I'm just tired. I had thoughts, but we're 2.5 hours into this recording. And you gotta piss. Where can they find you, honey?
So not my personal stuff, because I'll be honest, I don't want weird messages from bots, but you could follow my work stuff. Oh my god.
Our cam
I make
girl
shitpost
stuff.
TikToks for the escape room at TGER Akron. So that's always fun.
TGER Akron.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
Tagar!
I highly suggest watching my shitposts. They're really funny.
Cool.
Kisses. And you know what?
Thank you so much to Tristan Hofstetter for our theme music. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for dealing with this.
Hi.
Hold the hand of a friend and piss tonight.
I love you both. Goodbye.
This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.